Hey there, listeners. As many of you know, I played a concert at the Kennedy Center a couple of weeks ago at the Millennium Stage. And though there's some music on there that you may have heard if you've been paying close attention on this podcast, I think I tied some things together pretty well, and it's always nice to have a live version. So without further ado, I'm going to play you a very lightly edited version just to take out some of the pauses from that show. If you're interested, you can also find the full video on the Kennedy Center website at kennedy-center.org/millennium if you go to the archives and find the video from September 20th. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for this evening's performance at the Millennium Stage. Please welcome to the stage Sam Post.
How's everybody doing? That's loud.
Hey. Thank you guys for coming. This is going to be fun, I promise. And I want to thank the Kennedy Center for having me. All of the people helping me have been fantastic, so thank you guys. There was a little miscommunication, however, with the program, so I'm just going to tell you what I'm playing before I play it. There's going to be three sets of three pieces. Easy to remember, 3 times 3. The first set, 3 pieces inspired by American songs. The second set, 3 pieces inspired by music for children. And then the third set, 3 rags. So I've done this many times alone in a room by myself. I'm hoping it's going to be a lot more fun with you guys, but I'm going to need your help. So do be ready to raise your hand if I ask a question for a show of hands. So let's practice that right now. How many of you guys have ever been to a classical piano recital before? Awesome. How many people have been to a recital of all American music? I mean, like, United States of America. Is there a good way to say that, by the way? How many people have been to an all-American recital? Okay, pretty good. How many people have been to a recital with music inspired by Kesha? That's what I thought. Oh, okay, we got a couple. All right, well, you're going to hear that today. So, you know, the more I do this, I hope you don't mind if I talk for a little bit, too. This is my TED Talk. The more I do this, the more this term classical music kind of bugs me a little bit. It annoys me, and I don't really understand exactly what it means, and I don't think most people use it to mean the same thing or use it to mean what I want them to mean by it. But I think the most important thing is, you know, whatever category you want to put tonight's music in and whatever music you listen to and you enjoy when you go home, it's obviously a cliche, but you know, music has this incredible power to move us and to bring people together, make us laugh, make us cry. And you know, I've decided to devote my life to not only harnessing that power, but also figuring out, you know, what the deal is with it and what's going on. So not only do I want to, you know, make you laugh, make you cry tonight a little bit, I want to give you some idea of how that works and give you some knowledge, hopefully, that you can apply to whatever music you listen to, and also just give you some of that sense of wonder that I get every time I play music and think about music, because it's you know, it's great. Okay, so this first set, 3 pieces inspired by songs, and yeah, so the first one, the Star Spangled Banner, which I'm sure you guys know, the original by John Stafford Smith, and the piece for piano by me. The second one, Embraceable You by George Gershwin, that's the original, and then the pieces by Earl Wilde. And then the third one, Die Young by Kesha, and the piece is by me. So 3 classics, you might say, from 3 very different eras. And what brings them together is how, you know, they incorporate some element of the original with this, you know, more classically inspired piano tradition. And there's a basic problem with the piano. Well, there's many problems with the piano, but there's one very basic problem that's most obvious when we consider taking a song melody and moving it over to the piano, but it really applies to piano music more generally. So I want to tell you a little bit about that. And the basic problem is the piano is not really a very expressive instrument, because when you play a note,
The sound starts to die away right away, very disappointingly. You can't hold it like you can when you sing. And not only that, but it doesn't. There's no vibrato. It doesn't change pitch at all the way it naturally does when people sing, or the way you can on a violin or a clarinet or whatever. So that's kind of the blessing, sorry, that's the curse, but it's also a blessing a little bit of the piano, because it forces us to be more creative in terms of how we exploit and bring out the beauty in a melody. So, yeah, so, okay, how many people know this song, Embraceable You by George Gershwin? Okay, a lot of people. Well, I'm going to play you a little bit. This is technology for you. Watch this. Ooh. Ready? This is Ella Fitzgerald. If it works, let's see. Is it going?
Embrace me, my sweet, embraceable you.
Sorry, we can't play the whole thing. So what I'm going to do on the piano is going to be very different, perhaps not as seductive. It's a really great song and a classic version from Ella Fitzgerald. Now listen to how... So what happens in that song is there's this beautiful melody, and in the background accompanying it there are these chords, harmonies, which is very typical for a song. But like I said, that doesn't work so well on the piano usually. So... listen to the beginning of this piece that I'm going to play you, which uses the same melody but very differently. Get in there. And so on like that. So what happened was it's replaced these harmonies with this very flowery, florid accompaniment. So basically adding all this fancy stuff around the melody changes how we hear that melody, and it's kind of the magic of the piano that I think makes the melody sound more vocal than it would be if we just played. Which doesn't work that well. Okay, so that's one thing. Oh yeah, and then you'll hear similarly in the Star Spangled Banner piece. I assume you guys know that melody. I'm not going to play it for you. You'll hear the melody here. Like that. Okay, who knows this Kesha song, Die Young? Anyone? Okay, like four people. Wrong crowd.
Okay, I'm gonna play the beginning. So what I use in my piece is basically two fragments that you heard there. That part, I feel your heartbeat to the beat of the drum, and then let's make the most of the night like we're gonna die out. And so, yeah, what am I trying to say here? Okay, yeah. So in songs, there's a lot of repetition, and what happens lots of the time when you repeat the same music in a song is that the words change, and that's a very basic way of changing things, but also keeping them the same. Obviously, we can't do that on the piano, but there are lots of different ways to change a melody, add variation, and develop it, you might say, but still keeping some core element. So I want to give you a little sense of how that works. So listen to the beginning of this Kesha piece. It's a very similar melody, but it's been changed rhythmically and harmonically, so it's a different character. Another thing we can do to develop a melody is chop it up into pieces and move it around the keyboard. So you're going to hear little fragments of this melody here, and then down here, and up here.
and then we'll put it back together again. So, listen to how that sounds. And now it comes together. That way. Now there's one more theme that's really important in this Kesha piece. It comes from, again, this fragment you heard, I Feel Your Heartbeat. And in the piece it becomes... Let me play for that one more time, only in minor instead of major. Now listen closely, because I'm going to quiz you. What do you hear? Did anyone hear that theme? Raise your hand. Oh, come on, guys. Here. Let me play it again. Who heard it that time? Okay, yeah, that's better. Okay, so the theme was here. But what was happening in the left hand? Did anyone hear what was happening in the left hand? Anyone? You guys know already. Yeah, in the back. Anyone? No, that was you. Yeah? Shout it out. Well, in case anyone said it, it's the same thing, but at half speed. Everyone hear that it's the same melody? Yeah? So it's the same melody, half speed, so it's happening in two voices at once. And there's a generic term, fancy term, we call this counterpoint or polyphony. Polyphony, Latin for many voices. So it's just a fancy way of saying that really there's more than one melody happening at the same time. And this is really important kind of for all music to a greater or lesser extent, but especially piano music for the reasons I said earlier, and especially in the first and third pieces you're going to hear, this Kesha piece and in the Star Spangled Banner piece in kind of a more strict way. Who knows what composer is most associated with strict counterpoint? Shout it out. Yes! Bach. Okay. So that's three things we talked about, yeah? Dressing up a melody, developing a melody, adding variation, and then putting a melody in counterpoint. So let's hear these three pieces now. Thank you. Okay, I can do this. Next up is three pieces inspired by music for children. So the story behind these pieces is I'm a piano teacher, and I teach children. So oftentimes when they're playing in their lessons, I'll be playing along with them. So whatever piece they're playing, I'll be kind of playing on the other piano or playing on the same piano, you know, adding parts or whatever. And there's this book that I use for quite a few of my students called The Russian School of Piano Playing. There's two pieces in there that, there's a lot of pieces in there that I really like, but two in particular that I was playing along with my students and I was like, man, this would make, should be like a real piece. So I turned them into real pieces, and those two are called Under the Green Apple Tree. It's a, well, that's what it's called in the book. I think it's a traditional Russian folk song, and the other one is called Folk Song, also a traditional Russian folk song, I think. And those are the first and third pieces you're gonna hear, and then the middle one is actually an expansion of a piece that I wrote for a student. And what I like to do is play the original piece first, followed by the expanded version that I wrote for myself. And yeah, what I really like about these pieces, the first one, Under the Green Apple Tree, I can speak, is it's so much fun. It's like the most fun piece to play and to write. It's very short. But then the second one is like the darkest, most tragic thing I think I've written. So it's really a high-low. And then the last one, the folk song, is kind of encompasses a range of its own. But overall, it's incredibly sincere and heartfelt. So I think these three go really well together. And one thing I just want to tell you about quickly is syncopation. And that'll set us up really well for the last set, which is the rags also. So who has some general sense of what syncopation is? Raise your hand. Wow, okay, cool. So syncopation is a very general definition of syncopation. It's when you hear melodic notes on places in the beat, in the meter, where you don't expect to find them. So for instance, if we had music that had two beats, one, two, one, two, which one of those is naturally stronger? Who knows? Yell it out. One, thank you, good. So we get one, two, one, two, right? Now, this third piece, the melody, continuously inverts that natural relationship with these very expressive notes and longer notes on the second beat. So you get a lot of one, two, this way. One, two. So that's a very weak form of syncopation because still the emphasized notes are on the beats. It's just on a beat that you might not expect because it's the weaker beat of the two. A slightly stronger form of syncopation is when we put notes emphasized in between the beats. So the first piece, Under the Green Apple Tree, is also in two beats. And you're going to hear... I need that. You're going to hear notes this time in between the beats, this way. So if you want to hear that one, two, one, the notes in between the beats, nod. Good. I see some nodding. That was actually without the main melody in this piece, which is not syncopated, so I'm going to put that back in and play. So it's really three voices, bass, melody, and then this syncopated right hand above the melody. Listen to how that sounds. I think that's a key element to the fun of this piece is that syncopated part in the right hand always jabbing you in between the beats. Now this middle piece, Winter, the sad one, doesn't have a syncopation per se, but it's in three beats. The melody is always on the beat, not always, but mostly, so it's just one, two, three, one, two, three, two. Very simple melody, but the accompanying figure has these gaps. It's all on beats two and three, so it always has this gap, kind of breathless on the first beat, this way. So this always on beats two and three. Uh-oh. and then later on it gets angry. And it's almost like fate knocking on your door. It's not going away throughout the whole piece, pretty much. Okay, that's three pieces inspired by children's music. Under the Green Apple Tree, Winter, and Folk Song. Let's hear it. Thank you.
a little bit. Now are you ready to groove? It's ragtime. Now we're going to have some real fun. What was I going to say? That's back there. Okay, who knows? Okay, I'm going to play three rags. First one, Leapfrog Rag by me. Second one, Graceful Ghost Rag by William Bolcom. And the third one, Ladybug Rag by me also. And the first one is, by the way, a world premiere. I finished it 2 days ago. So who knows or has some idea, some concept of what ragtime is? Raise your hand. Okay, fair number. So the key to ragtime is syncopation, but it's a different kind of syncopation than the one we heard in Under the Green Apple Tree. So let me show you how that works. In that piece, we heard notes in between the beats this way. So it was like ta, ta, one, ta, ta, like that. In ragtime, the notes come even closer to the beats immediately after or immediately before, more like this. Can you hear my snapping, by the way? Ta, 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 ta. That's a little more jazzy, like that. And ragtime came about around the turn of the 20th century. It's really a true American form from the South, and originally is piano music. And the people who first heard it thought that the rhythms were so ragged because the notes weren't lining up with the beats. They thought it was a mistake. They thought the people couldn't play. So they said it was ragged, and thus the term ragtime was born. So it comes from the ragged rhythms. So let me show you how that works a little bit. This is a pared down version of a very famous rag for you. So listen. Anyone recognize that? Raise your hands. Oh, good. What was it? Very good. Okay, I'm gonna fill it in now so you'll hear it more clearly. So that's The Entertainer by Scott Joplin, probably the most famous ragtime composer today. And, you know, someone who I really didn't appreciate, I'm not checking my texts, by the way, someone I didn't really appreciate till very recently for a very specific reason, and that is because if you Google or YouTube or, you know, wherever you get your tunes, if you look up The Entertainer, you're likely to hear something like this. Okay, I don't want to put you to sleep. Let's listen to a different version, shall we? Do, 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 gotta find it. Now we're gonna skip to the refrain. So very different spirit there. The second one, the first one, by the way, was nominated for a Grammy. I'm not going to tell you who it was, but I understand. The second one, the spirit is just completely different. The second one was actually from a piano roll by Scott Joplin himself. And I should mention, he's not really playing what he wrote down. He's adding a lot of notes and changing a lot of notes, so he's improvising quite a bit there. And, you know, there's this dangerous idea, I think it's a dangerous idea, many people would disagree, that came into classical music and is still kind of enforced today. It came about around the latter half of the 1800s, this idea that music is about preservation, and specifically about preserving the way composers wrote their music and playing it just right. And I think this is a very obvious example of why that's not the right approach, because it can lead to this very careful, very serious, you know, get up there in your tux and you play ragtime. but it completely misses the point. I mean, this music is supposed to be fun, spontaneous, and cool, and I don't think any of you would have spontaneously started, like, doing this to the first one, but hopefully that second one made you want to move a little bit, and that's really the idea behind Ragtime. So I think that principle, although it's very obvious here, you know, I would apply it to Bach and Beethoven and Brahms. You know, depending on what piece you're playing, obviously, I think the idea is the same, that composers didn't write down their music so that it could be the same for all eternity. There's no fun in that. It would just be the same all the time. They wrote it down so that it could be preserved in its essential some form, and that's certainly why I write my music down. So again, a lot of people disagree with me on that, but if you hear them, you can push back for me. I will appreciate it. Okay, so three rags. Like I said, the first one is a world premiere, and you know, it's one of the most exciting things that I can do is play a piece for the first time. But part of the excitement comes from the fact that things are bound to go wrong, so bear with me. And then Graceful Ghost Rag by William Bovum. Oh, and I should mention, you know, so Scott Joplin, full of flair. I really like his music now. I have to say, it's a little bit one-dimensional. Lots of, you know, four-bar phrases, not that much emotional depth. So a lot of composers since then have taken Ragtime and tried to add a little bit of depth and a little bit of variety and a little bit more counterpoint, which is a polyphony, which we talked about earlier. And so these three rags are really written in that spirit. You'll hear these dark and brooding middle sections in the two that I wrote. The middle of Graceful Ghost Rag is this beautiful, kind of sounds like a folk melody from the Civil War or something. Let me just... So some really fun, lovely things. And, oh yeah, the last thing I want to say, so raise your hand if you think supporting the arts is important. Yeah, okay, good. So you can all write me a check after the show. Just kidding. Okay. But seriously, it's very difficult, you know, being an artist. And I count on the support of people like you. And there are lots of different ways that you can support artists and support me. I'm selling CDs in the back. But if you don't want to buy anything, you know, that's cool. Most people probably don't even have CD players anymore. But if you would like to sign up for my email list, I send out an email about once a month about concerts that I'm doing and projects. One of those projects that I've been doing is a podcast called The Music Post. You can find it on iTunes. And it's much like this concert. You know, I talk, pick a theme, talk about music, play some music. So it's pretty cool. And you can find me on Facebook and YouTube as well. So these are little things, but they do make a difference for me. So if you enjoyed what you heard today, and I hope that I've earned your enjoyment or support or whatever, and if you enjoy this last set, then I encourage you to support me. So thanks so much for coming. Enjoy these three rags.
Well, that's the show for today. As always, thanks so much for listening. You can find out more about this podcast on the website www.samueljpost.com/podcast, and you can reach me at samueljpost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time from the Music Post. Bye.